society and wholesome books and a strict governess. So naturally one wonders where on earth she got her taste for vulgarity. The worst of it is I can't make her realize that I'm worried for her happiness, not my own. Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that, Lydia said. It's just how I feel. Charlotte seems to think there's something false or silly about our protecting her. She sighed. We must marry them off quickly before they come to any harm. Absolutely. Is anyone interested in Charlotte? Freddy Chalfont. Ah, yes, I'd heard that. He even seems to be prepared to talk politics to her. But I'm afraid she's not awfully interested in him. What about Belinda? The opposite problem. She likes them all. Oh, dear, Lydia laughed, and moved on, feeling better. In some ways, Clarissa, as a stepmother, had a more difficult task than Lydia. I suppose I have much to be thankful for, she thought. The Duchess of Middlesex was in the next room. Most people stayed on their feet at a crush, but the Duchess, characteristically, sat down and let people come to her. Lydia approached her just as Lady Gay Stevens was moving away. I gather Charlotte is quite recovered from her headache, the Duchess said. Yes, indeed, it's kind of you to inquire. Oh, I wasn't inquiring, the Duchess said. My nephew saw her in the National Gallery at 4 o'clock. The National Gallery? What in heaven's name was she doing there? She had sneaked out again. But Lydia was not going to let the Duchess know that Charlotte had been misbehaving. She has always been fond of art, she improvised. She was with a man, the Duchess said. Freddy Chalfont must have a rival. The little minx. Lydia concealed her fury. Indeed, she said, forcing a smile. Who is he? Just one of their set, Lydia said desperately. Oh, no, said the Duchess with a malicious smile. He was about 40 and wearing a tweed cap. A tweed cap? Lydia was being humiliated, and she knew it. But she hardly cared. Who could the man be? What was Charlotte thinking of? Her reputation? They were holding hands, the Duchess added, and she smiled broadly, showing rotten teeth. Lydia could no longer pretend that everything was all right. Oh, my God, she said. What has the child got into now? The Duchess said, In my day, the chaperone system was found effective in preventing this sort of thing. Lydia was suddenly very angry at the pleasure the Duchess was taking in this catastrophe. "That was 100 years ago, she snapped. She walked away. A tweed cap, holding hands, 40 years old? It was too appalling to be contemplated. The cap meant he was working class, the age meant he was a lecher, and the hand-holding implied that matters had already gone far, perhaps too far. What can I do, she thought helplessly, if the child goes out of the house without my knowledge? Oh, Charlotte, Charlotte, you don't know what you're doing to yourself. What was the boxing match like? Charlotte asked Belinda. In a horrid sort of way, it was terribly exciting, Belinda said. These two enormous men, wearing nothing but their shorts, standing there trying to beat each other to death. Charlotte did not see how that could be exciting. It sounds dreadful. I got so worked up, Belinda lowered her voice, that I almost let Peter go too far. What do you mean? You know, afterwards in the cab on the way home, I let him kiss me and so on. What's... and so on? But Belinda whispered. He kissed my bosom. Oh, Charlotte frowned. Was it nice? Heavenly. Well, well. Charlotte tried to picture Freddy kissing her bosom, and somehow she knew it would not be heavenly. Mama walked past and said, We're leaving, Charlotte. Belinda said. She looks cross. Charlotte shrugged. Nothing unusual in that. We're going to a coon show afterward. Why don't you come with us? What's a coon show? Jazz. It's wonderful music. Mama wouldn't let me. Your mama is so old-fashioned. You're telling me. I'd better go. Bye. Charlotte went down the stairs and got her wrap from the cloakroom. She felt as if two people were inhabiting her skin. Like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. One of them smiled and made polite conversation and talked to Belinda about girlish matters. The other thought about kidnapping and treachery and asked sly questions in an innocent tone of voice. Without waiting for her parents, she went outside and said to the footman, The Earl of Walden's car. A couple of minutes later, the Lanchester pulled up at the curb. It was a warm evening, and Pritchard had the hood down. He got out of the car and held the door for Charlotte. She said, "Pritchard, where is Prince Orlov?"
"It's supposed to be a secret, my lady."
"You can tell me."
"I'd rather you asked your papa, my lady."
It was no good. She could not bully these servants who had known her as a baby. She gave up and said, "You better go into the hall and tell them I'm waiting in the car."
"Very good, my lady."
Charlotte sat back on the leather seat. She had asked the three people who might have known where Alex was, and none of them would tell her. They did not trust her to keep the secret, and the maddening thing was that they were, of course, quite right. She still had not decided whether to help Felix, however. Now, if she could not get the information he wanted, perhaps she would not have to make the agonizing decision. What a relief that would be. She had arranged to meet Felix the day after tomorrow, same place, same time. What would he say when she turned up empty-handed? Would he despise her for failing? No, he was not like that. He would be terribly disappointed. Perhaps he would be able to think of another way to find out where Alex was. She could not wait to see him again. He was so interesting, and she learned so much from him that the rest of her life seemed unbearably dull without him. Even the anxiety of this great dilemma into which he had thrown her was better than the boredom of choosing dresses for yet another day of empty social routine. Papa and Mama got into the car, and Pritchard drove off. Papa said, "What's the matter, Lydia? You look rather upset." Mama looked at Charlotte. "What were you doing in the National Gallery this afternoon?" Charlotte's heart missed a beat. She had been found out. Someone had spied on her. Now there would be trouble. Her hands started to shake, and she held them together in her lap.
"I was looking at pictures."
"You were with a man?"
Papa said.
"Oh, no. Charlotte, what is all this?"
"He's just somebody I met," Charlotte said. "You wouldn't approve of him."
"Of course we wouldn't approve," Mama said. "He was wearing a tweed cap."
Papa said,
"A tweed cap? Who the devil is he?"
"He's a terribly interesting man, and he understands things."
"And he holds your hand," Mama interrupted.
Papa said sadly, "Charlotte, how vulgar. In the National Gallery."
"There's no romance," Charlotte said. "You've nothing to fear."
"Nothing to fear," Mama said with a brittle laugh. "That evil old Duchess knows all about it, and she'll tell everyone."
Papa said, "How could you do this to your Mama?"
Charlotte could not speak. She was close to tears. She thought, "I did nothing wrong, just held a conversation with someone who talks sense. How can they be so brutish? I hate them."
Papa said, "You'd better tell me who he is. I expect he can be paid off."
Charlotte shouted, "I should think he's one of the few people in the world who can't."
"I suppose he's some radical," Mama said. "No doubt it is he who has been filling your head with foolishness about suffragism. He probably wears sandals and eats potatoes with the skins on."
She lost her temper. "He probably believes in free love. If you have..."
"No, I haven't," Charlotte said. "I told you there's no romance."
A tear rolled down her nose.
"I'm not the romantic type."
"I don't believe you for a minute," Papa said disgustedly. "Nor will anyone else. Whether you realize it or not, this episode is a social catastrophe for all of us."
"We'd better put her in a convent," Mama said hysterically, and she began to cry.
"I'm sure that won't be necessary," Papa said.
Mama shook her head. "I didn't mean it. I'm sorry to be so shrill, but I just get so worried."
"However, she can't stay in London after this."
"Certainly not." The car pulled into the courtyard of their house. Mama dried her eyes so that the servants would not see her upset. Charlotte thought, "And so they will stop me from seeing Felix and send me away and lock me up. I wish now I had promised to help him instead of hesitating and saying I would think about it. At least then he would know I'm on his side. Well, they won't win. I shan't live the life they have mapped out for me. I shan't marry Freddy and become Lady Chalfont and raise fat, complacent children. They can't keep me locked away forever. As soon as I'm 21, I'll go and work for Mrs. Pankhurst and read books about anarchism and start a rest home for unmarried mothers, and if I ever have children, I will never, never tell them lies."
They went into the house. Papa said, "Come into the drawing room."
Pritchard followed them in.
"Would you like some sandwiches, my lord?"
"Not just now. Leave us alone for a while, would you, Pritchard?"
Pritchard went out. Papa made a brandy and soda and sipped it.
"Think again, Charlotte," he said. "Will you tell us who this man is?"
She wanted to say, "He's an anarchist who is trying to prevent your starting a war," but she merely shook her head. "Then you must see," he said almost gently, "that we can't possibly trust you." "You could have," once she thought bitterly, "but not any more." Papa spoke to Mama. "She'll just have to go to the country for a month. It's the only way to keep her out of trouble. Then after the cow's regatta, she can come to Scotland for the shooting." He sighed. "Perhaps she'll be more manageable by next season." Mama said, "We'll send her to Walden Hall then." Charlotte thought, "They're talking about me as if I weren't here." Papa said, "I'm driving down to Norfolk in the morning to see Alex again. I'll take her with me." Charlotte was stunned. Alex was at Walden Hall. "I never even thought of that. Now I know." "She'd better go up and pack," Mama said. Charlotte stood up and went out, keeping her face down so that they should not see the light of triumph in her eyes. Chapter 12. At 2:45, Felix was in the lobby of the National Gallery. Charlotte would probably be late, like last time, but anyway he had nothing better to do. He was nervy and restless, sick of waiting and sick of hiding. He had slept rough again the last 2 nights, once in Hyde Park and once under the arches at Charing Cross. During the day he had hidden in alleys and railway sidings and patches of waste ground, coming out only to get food. It reminded him of being on the run in Siberia, and the memory was unpleasant. Even now he kept moving, going from the lobby into the domed rooms, glancing at the pictures, and returning to the lobby to look for her. He watched the clock on the wall. At 3:30 she still had not come. She had got involved in another dreadful luncheon party. She would surely be able to find out where Orloff was. She was an ingenious girl, he was certain. Even if her father would not tell her straightforwardly, she would think of a way to discover the secret. Whether she would pass the information on was another matter. She was strong-willed, too. He wished. He wished a lot of things. He wished he had not deceived her. He wished he could find Orloff without her help. He wished human beings did not make themselves into princes and earls and kaisers and czars. He wished he had married Lydia and known Charlotte as a baby. He wished she would come. It was 4:00. Most of the paintings meant nothing to him, the sentimental religious scenes, the portraits of smug Dutch merchants in their lifeless homes. He liked Bronzino's allegory, but only because it was so sensual. Art was an area of human experience which he had passed by. Perhaps one day Charlotte would lead him into the forest and show him the flowers. But it was unlikely. First he would have to live through the next few days and escape after killing Orloff. Even that much was not certain. Then he would have to retain Charlotte's affection despite having used her, lied to her, and killed her cousin. That was close to impossible, but even if it happened, he would have to find ways of seeing her while avoiding the police. No, there was not much chance he would know her after the assassination. He thought, make the most of her now. It was 4:30. She's not just late, he thought with a sinking heart. She is unable to come. I hope she's not in trouble with Walden. I hope she didn't take risks and get found out. I wish she would come running up the steps, out of breath and a little flushed, with her hat slightly awry and an anxious look on her pretty face, and say, I'm terribly sorry to have made you wait about. I got involved in... The building seemed to be emptying out. Felix wondered what to do next. He went outside and down the steps to the pavement. There was no sign of her. He went back up the steps and was stopped at the door by a commissionaire. Too late, mate, the man said. We're closing. Felix turned away. He could not wait about on the steps in the hope that she would come later, for he would be too conspicuous right here in Trafalgar Square. Anyway, she was now 2 hours late. She was not going to come. She was not going to come. Face it, he thought. She has decided to have nothing more to do with me, and quite sensibly. But would she not have come, if only to tell me that? She might have sent a note. She might have sent a note. She had Bridget's address. She would have sent a note. Felix headed north. He walked through the alleys of Theatreland and the quiet squares of Bloomsbury. The weather was changing. All the time he had been in England it had been sunny and warm, and he had yet to see rain, but for the last day or so the atmosphere had seemed oppressive, as if a storm were slowly gathering. He thought, I wonder what it is like to live in Bloomsbury in this prosperous middle-class atmosphere, where there is always enough to eat and money left over for books. But after the revolution we will take down the railings around the parks. He had a headache. He had not suffered headaches since childhood. He wondered whether it was caused by the stormy air. More likely it was worry. After the revolution, he thought, headaches will be prohibited. Would there be a note from her waiting at Bridget's house? He imagined it. Dear Mr. Chasinski, I regret I am unable to keep our appointment today. Yours truly, Lady Charlotte Walden. No, it would surely not be like that. Dear Felix, Prince Orlov is staying at the home of the Russian naval attaché, 25A Wilton Place, third floor, left front bedroom. Your affectionate friend, Charlotte. That was more like it. Dear Father, yes, I have learned the truth, but my papa has locked me in my room. Please come and rescue me, your loving daughter, Charlotte Chasinski. Don't be a damn fool. He reached Cork Street and looked along the road. There were no policemen guarding the house, no hefty characters in plain clothes reading newspapers outside the pub. It looked safe. His heart lifted. There's something marvellous about a warm welcome from a woman, he thought, whether she's a slip of a girl like Charlotte or a fat old witch like Bridget. I've spent too much of my life with men, or alone. He knocked on Bridget's door. As he waited, he looked down at the window of his old basement room and saw that there were new curtains. The door opened. Bridget looked at him and smiled widely. "It's my favourite international terrorist, Bigod," she said. "Come in, you darling man." He went into her parlour. "Do you want some tea? It's hot." "Yes, please," he sat down. "Did the police trouble you?" "I was interrogated by a superintendent. You must be a big cheese." "What did you tell him?" She looked contemptuous. "He'd left his truncheon at home. He got nothing out of me." Felix smiled. "Have you got a letter?" But she was still talking. "Did you want your room back? I've let it to another fellow, but I'll chuck him out. He's got side whiskers, and I never could abide side whiskers." "No, I don't want my room." "You've been sleeping rough. I can tell by the look on you." "That's right. Whatever it was you came to London to do, you haven't done it yet." "No." "Something's happened. You've changed."
"Yes."
"What then?" He was suddenly grateful for someone to whom he could talk about it. "Years ago I had a love affair. I didn't know it, but the woman had a baby. A few days ago I met my daughter."
"Arr."
She looked at him with pity in her eyes. "You poor bugger. And if you didn't have enough on your mind already. Is she the one that wrote the letter?" Felix gave a grunt of satisfaction. "There's a letter. I supposed that's what you came for." She went to the mantelpiece and reached behind the clock. "And is the poor girl mixed up with oppressors and tyrants?"
"Yes."
"I thought so from the crest." "You don't get much luck, do you?" She handed him the letter. Felix saw the crest on the back of the envelope. He ripped it open. Inside were two pages covered with neat, stylish handwriting. "Walden Hall, July the 1st, 1914. "Dear Felix, by the time you get this, you will have waited in vain for me at our rendezvous. I am most awfully sorry to let you down. Unfortunately, I was seen with you on Monday, and it is assumed I have a clandestine lover." If she's in trouble, she seems cheerful enough about it, Felix thought. "I have been banished to the country for the rest of the season. However, it is a blessing in disguise. Nobody would tell me where Alex was, but now I know because he is here." Felix was filled with savage triumph.
"So that's where the rats have their nest."
Bridget said, "Is this child helping you?" "She was my only hope."
"Then you deserve to look troubled."
"I know." "Take a train from Liverpool Street Station to Walden Hall Halt. This is our village. The house is 3 miles out of the village on the North Road. However, don't come to the house, of course. On the left-hand side of the road you will see a wood. I always ride through the wood along the bridle path before breakfast between 7 and 8 o'clock. I will look out for you each day until you come." Once she decided whose side she was on, Felix thought, there were no half measures. "I'm not sure when this will get sent. I will put it on the hall table as soon as I see some other letters for posting there. That way nobody will see my handwriting on an envelope, and the footman will just pick it up along with all the rest when he goes to the post office. She's a brave girl, Felix said aloud. I am doing this because you are the only person I ever met who talked sense to me. Yours most affectionately, Charlotte. Felix sat back in his seat and closed his eyes. He was so proud of her and so ashamed of himself that he felt close to tears. Bridget took the letter from his unresisting fingers and began to read. So she doesn't know you're her father, she said. No. Why is she helping you, then? She believes in what I'm doing. Bridget made a disgusted noise. Men like yourself always find women to help them. I should know, be Christ. She read on. She writes like a schoolgirl. Yes. How old is she? 18. Old enough to know her own mind. Alex is the one you're after. Felix nodded. What is he? A Russian prince. Then he deserves to die. He's dragging Russia into war. Bridget nodded. And you're dragging Charlotte into it. Do you think I'm doing wrong? She handed the letter back to him. She seemed angry. We'll never be sure, will we? Politics is like that. Life is like that. Felix tore the envelope in half and dropped it in the waste paper bin. He intended to rip up the letter, but he could not bring himself to do it. When it's all over, he thought, this may be all I have to remember her by. He folded the two sheets of paper and put them in his coat pocket. He stood up. I've got a train to catch. Do you want me to make you a sandwich to take with you? He shook his head. Thank you, I'm not hungry. Have you money for your fare? I never pay train fares. She put her hand in the pocket of her apron and took out a sovereign. Here, you can buy a cup of tea as well. It's a lot of money. I can afford it this week. Away with you before I change my mind. Felix took the coin and kissed her goodbye. You have been kind to me. It's not for you, it's for my Sean, God rest his merry soul. Goodbye. Good luck to you, boy. Felix went out. Walden was in an optimistic mood as he entered the Admiralty building. He had done what he had promised. He had sold Constantinople to Alex. The previous afternoon, Alex had sent a message to the Tsar recommending acceptance of the British offer. Walden was confident that the Tsar would follow the advice of his favorite nephew, especially after the assassination of Sarajevo. He was not so sure that Lloyd George would bend to the will of Asquith. He was shown into the office of the First Lord of the Admiralty. Churchill bounced up out of his chair and came around his desk to shake hands. "We sold it to Lloyd George," he said triumphantly. "That's marvellous," Walden said, "and I sold it to Orloff." "I knew you would. Sit down." I might have known better than to expect to thank you, Walden thought. But even Churchill could not damp his spirits today. He sat on a leather chair and glanced around the room at the charts on the walls and the naval memorabilia on the desk. "We should hear from St. Petersburg at any time," he said. "The Russian embassy will send a note directly to you." "The sooner the better," Churchill said. "Count Hayes has been to Berlin. According to our intelligence, he took with him a letter asking the Kaiser whether Germany would support Austria in a war against Serbia. Our intelligence also says the answer was yes." "The Germans don't want to fight Serbia." "No," Churchill interrupted. "They want an excuse to fight France. Once Germany mobilizes, France will mobilize, and that will be Germany's pretext for invading France. There's no stopping it now." "Do the Russians know all this?" "We've told them. I hope they believe us." "Can nothing be done to make peace?" "Everything is being done," Churchill said. "Sir Edward Grey is working night and day, as are our ambassadors in Berlin, Paris, Vienna, and St. Petersburg. Even the King is firing off telegrams to his cousins, Kaiser Willie and Tsar Nicky. It'll do no good." There was a knock at the door, and a young male secretary came in with a piece of paper. "A message from the Russian ambassador, sir," he said. Walden tensed. Churchill glanced at the paper and looked up with triumph in his eyes. "They've accepted," Walden beamed. "Bloody good show." The secretary went out. Churchill stood up.
This calls for a whisky and soda. Will you join me?
Certainly. Churchill opened a cupboard.
I'll have the treaty drafted overnight and bring it down to Walden Hall tomorrow afternoon. We can have a little signing ceremony tomorrow night. It will have to be ratified by the Tsar and Asquith, of course, but that's a formality, so long as Orloff and I sign as soon as possible. The secretary knocked and came in again. Mr. Basil Thompson is here, sir.
Show him in.
Thompson came in and spoke without preamble.
We picked up the trail of our anarchist again.
Good,
said Walden. Thompson sat down.
You remember that I put a man in his old basement room in Cork Street, just in case he should go back there.
I remember, Walden said.
He did go back there. When he left, my man followed him.
Where did he go?
To Liverpool Street Station,
Thompson paused.
And he bought a ticket to Walden Hall Holt.
Chapter 13. Walden went cold. His first thought was for Charlotte. She was vulnerable there. The bodyguards were concentrating on Alex, and she had nobody to protect her but the servants. How could I have been so stupid, he thought. He was nearly as worried for Alex. The boy was almost like a son to Walden. He thought he was safe in Walden's home, and now Felix was on his way there with a gun or a bomb to kill him, and perhaps Charlotte too, and sabotage the treaty. Walden burst out.
Why the devil haven't you stopped him?
Thompson said mildly.
I don't think it's a good idea for one man alone to go up against our friend Felix, do you? We've seen what he can do against several men. He seems not to care about his own life. My chappie has instructions to follow him and report.
It's not enough.
I know, my lord, Thompson interrupted.
Churchill said,
Let us be calm, gentlemen. At least we know where the fellow is. With all the resources of His Majesty's government at our disposal, we shall catch him. What do you propose, Thompson?
As a matter of fact, I've already done it, sir. I spoke by telephone with the chief constable of the county, who will have a large detachment of men waiting at Walden Hall Holt to arrest Felix as he gets off the train. Meanwhile, in case anything should go wrong, my chappie will stick to him like glue.
That won't do, Walden said. Stop the train and arrest him before he gets anywhere near my home.
I did consider that, Thompson said. The dangers outweigh the advantages. Much better to let him go on thinking he's safe than catch him unawares.
Churchill said,
I agree.
It's not your home, Walden said.
You're going to have to leave this to the professionals, Churchill said.
Walden realized he could not overrule them. He stood up. I shall motor to Walden Hall immediately. Will you come, Thompson?
Not tonight. I'm going to arrest the Callahan woman. Once we've caught Felix, we have to mount a prosecution, and she may be our chief witness. I'll come down tomorrow to interrogate Felix.
I don't know how you can be so confident, Walden said angrily.
We'll catch him this time, Thompson said.
I hope to God you're right.
The train steamed into the falling evening. Felix watched the sun setting over the English wheat fields. He was not young enough to take mechanical transport for granted. He still found travelling by train almost magical. The boy who had walked in clogs across the muddy Russian meadows could not have dreamed this. He was alone in the carriage, but for a young man who seemed intent on reading every line of this evening's Pall Mall Gazette. Felix's mood was almost gay. Tomorrow morning he would see Charlotte. How fine she would look on a horse with the wind streaming her hair. They would be working together. She would tell him where Orloff's room was, where he was to be found at different times of day. She would help him get hold of a weapon. It was her letter that had made him so cheerful, he realized. She was on his side now, come what may. Except that he had told her he was going to kidnap Orloff. Each time he recalled this, he wanted to squirm in his seat. He tried to put it out of his mind, but the thought was like an itch that could not be ignored and had to be scratched. Well, he thought, what is to be done? I must begin to prepare her for the news, at least. Perhaps I should tell her that I am her father. What a shock it will be. For a moment he was tempted by the idea of going away, vanishing and never seeing her again, leaving her in peace. No, he thought, that is not her destiny, nor is it mine. I wonder what is my destiny after the killing of Orloff. Shall I die? He shook his head as if he could get rid of the thought, like shaking off a fly. This was no time for gloom. He had plans to make. How will I kill Orloff? There will be guns to steal in an earl's country house. Charlotte can tell me where they are, or bring me one. Failing that, there will be knives in the kitchen, and I have my bare hands. He flexed his fingers. Will I have to go into the house, or will Orloff come out? Shall I do it by day or by night? Shall I kill Walden, too? Politically, the death of Walden would make no difference, but I should like to kill him anyway. So it's personal. So what? He thought again of Walden catching the bottle. Don't underestimate that man, he told himself. I must be careful that Charlotte has an alibi. No one must ever know she helped me. The train slowed down and entered a little country station. Felix tried to recall the map he had looked at in Liverpool Street Station. He seemed to remember that Walden Hall Holt was the fourth station after this one. His travelling companion at last finished the Pall Mall Gazette and put it down on the seat beside him. Felix decided that he could not plan the assassination until he had seen the lay of the land, so he said, "May I read your newspaper?" The man seemed startled. "Englishmen do not speak to strangers on trains," Felix recalled. "By all means," the man said. Felix had learned that this phrase meant yes. He picked up the paper. "Thank you." He glanced at the headlines. His companion stared out of the window as if embarrassed. He had the kind of facial hair that had been fashionable when Felix was a boy. Felix tried to remember the English word. Side whiskers, that was it. Side whiskers. "Did you want your room back? I've let it to another fellow, but I'll chuck him out. He's got side whiskers, and I never could abide side whiskers." And now Felix recalled that this man had been behind him in the queue at the ticket office. He felt a stab of fear. He held the newspaper in front of his face in case his thoughts should show in his expression. He made himself think calmly and clearly. Something Bridget had said had made the police suspicious enough to place a watch on her house. They had done that by the simple means of having a detective live in the room Felix had vacated. The detective had seen Felix call, had recognized him, and had followed him to the station. Standing behind Felix in the queue, he had heard him ask for Walden Hall Holt and bought himself a ticket to the same destination. Then he had boarded the train along with Felix. No, not quite. Felix had sat in the train for 10 minutes or so before it pulled out. The man with the side whiskers had jumped aboard at the last minute. What had he been doing in those few missing minutes? He had probably made a phone call. Felix imagined the conversation as the detective sat in the station master's office, speaking into a telephone. "The anarchist returned to the house in Cork Street, sir. I'm following him now." "Where are you?" "At Liverpool Street Station. He bought a ticket to Walden Hall Holt. He's on the train now." "Has it left?" "Not for another 7 minutes." "Are there any police in the station?" "Just a couple of bobbies." "It's not enough. This man is dangerous." "I can have a train delayed while you get a team down here. Our anarchist might get suspicious and bolt for it." "No, you stay with him." And what, Felix wondered, would they do then? They could either take him off the train somewhere along the route or wait to catch him at Walden Hall Holt. Either way, he had to get off the train, fast. What to do about the detective? He must be left behind on the train, unable to give the alarm, so that Felix would have time to get clear. I could tie him up, if I had anything to tie him with, Felix thought. I could knock him out, if I had something heavy and hard to hit him with. I could strangle him, but that would take time and someone might see. I could throw him off the train, but I want to leave him on the train. The train began to slow down. They might be waiting for me at the next station, he thought. I wish I had a weapon. Does the detective have a gun? I doubt it. I could break the window and use a shard of glass to cut his throat, but that would surely draw a crowd. I must get off the train. This book is continued on cassette number 7. The Man from St. Petersburg by Ken Follett continued. I could break the window and use a shard of glass to cut his throat, but that would surely draw a crowd. I must get off the train. A few houses could be seen alongside the railway track. They were coming into a village or a small town. The brakes of the train squealed and a station slid into view. Felix watched intently for signs of a police trap. The platform appeared empty. The locomotive shuddered to a halt with a hiss of steam. People began to get off. A handful of passengers walked past Felix's window, heading for the exit.
a family with two small children, a woman with a hatbox, a tall man in tweeds. I could hit the detective, he thought, but it's so hard to knock somebody unconscious with just your fists. The police trap could be at the next station. I must get off now. A whistle blew. Felix stood up. The detective looked startled. Felix said, Is there a toilet on the train? Detective was thrown by this. Sure to be, he said. Thank you. He doesn't know whether to believe me, Felix thought. He stepped out of the compartment and into the corridor. He ran to the end of the carriage. The train chuffed and jerked forward. Felix looked back. The detective poked his head out of the compartment. Felix went into the toilet and came back out again. The detective was still watching. The train moved a little faster. Felix went to the carriage door. The detective came running. Felix turned back and punched him full in the face. The blow stopped the detective in his tracks. Felix hit him again in the stomach. A woman screamed. Felix got him by the coat and dragged him into the toilet. The detective struggled and threw a wild punch which caught Felix in the ribs and made him gasp. He got the detective's head in his hands and banged it against the edge of the wash basin. The train picked up speed. Felix banged the detective's head again and then again. The man went limp. Felix dropped him and stepped out of the toilet. He went to the door and opened it. The train was moving at running speed. A woman at the other end of the corridor watched him white-faced. Felix jumped. The door banged shut behind him. He landed running. He stumbled and regained his balance. The train moved on, faster and faster. Felix walked to the exit. You left it a bit late, said the ticket man. Felix nodded and handed over his ticket. This ticket takes you three more stations, the ticket man said. I changed my mind at the last minute. There was a squeal of brakes. They both looked along the track. The train was stopping. Someone had pulled the emergency brake. The ticket man said, Here, what's going on? Felix forced himself to shrug unconcernedly. Search me, he said. He wanted to run, but that would be the worst thing he could do. The ticket man hovered, torn between his suspicion of Felix and his concern for the train. Finally, he said, You wait here, and ran along the platform. The train stopped a couple of hundred yards out of the station. Felix watched the ticket man run to the end of the platform and down onto the embankment. He looked around. He was alone. He walked briskly out of the station and into the town. A few minutes later, a car with three policemen in it went past him at top speed, heading for the station. On the outskirts of the town, Felix climbed over a gate and went into a cornfield where he lay down to wait for nightfall. The big Lanchester roared up the drive to Walden Hall. All the lights were on in the house. A uniformed policeman stood at the door, and another was patrolling sentry fashion along the terrace. Pritchard brought the car to a halt. The policeman at the entrance stood to attention and saluted. Pritchard opened the car door, and Walden got out. Mrs. Braithwaite, the housekeeper, came out of the house to greet him.
Good evening, my lord.
Hello, Mrs. Braithwaite. Who's here?
Sir Arthur is in the drawing-room with Prince Orloff.
Walden nodded and they entered the house together. Sir Arthur Langley was the chief constable and an old school friend of Walden's.
Have you dined, my lord? Said Mrs. Braithwaite.
No.
Perhaps a piece of game pie and a bottle of burgundy?
I leave it to you.
Very good, my lord.
Mrs. Braithwaite went away and Walden entered the drawing-room. Alex and Sir Arthur were leaning on the mantelpiece with brandy glasses in their hands. Both wore evening dress. Sir Arthur said,
Hello, Stephen. How are you?
Walden shook his hand. Did you catch the anarchist?
I'm afraid he slipped through our fingers.
Damnation! Walden exclaimed. I was afraid of that. No one would listen to me. He remembered his manners and shook hands with Alex. I don't know what to say to you, dear boy. You must think we're a lot of fools. He turned back to Sir Arthur. What the devil happened anyway?
Felix hopped off the train at Dingley.
Where was Thompson's precious detective?
In the toilet with a broken head.
Marvellous, Walden said bitterly. He slumped into a chair.
By the time the town constabulary had been roused, Felix had melted away.
He's on his way here. Do you realize that?
Yes, of course, said Sir Arthur in a soothing tone.
Your men should be instructed the next time he is sighted, he's to be shot.
Ideally, yes, but of course they don't have guns.
They damn well should have.
I think you're right, but public opinion...
Before we discuss that, tell me what is being done.
Very well. I've got 5 patrols covering the roads between here and Tingley.
They won't see him in the dark.
Perhaps not, but at least their presence will slow him down, if not stop him altogether.
I doubt it. What else?
I brought a constable and a sergeant to guard the house.
I saw them outside.
They'll be relieved every 8 hours, day and night. The prince already has 2 bodyguards from the special branch, and Thompson is sending 4 more down here by car tonight. They'll take 12-hour shifts, so he'll always have 3 men with him. My men aren't armed, but Thompson's are. They have revolvers. My recommendation is that until Felix is caught, Prince Orloff should remain in his room and be served his food and so on by the bodyguards.
Alex said, I will do that. Walden looked at him. He was pale but calm. He's very brave, Walden thought. If I were he, I should be raging about the incompetence of the British police. Walden said, I don't think a few bodyguards is enough. We need an army.
We'll have one by tomorrow morning, Sir Arthur replied. We're mounting a search beginning at 9 o'clock.
Why not at dawn?
Because the army has to be mustered. 150 men will be coming here from all over the county. Most of them are now in bed. They have to be visited and given their instructions, and they have to make their ways here.
Mrs. Braithwaite came in with a tray. There was cold game pie, 1/2 a chicken, a bowl of potato salad, bread rolls, cold sausages, sliced tomatoes, a wedge of cheddar cheese, several kinds of chutney, and some fruit. A footman followed with a bottle of wine, a jug of milk, a pot of coffee, a dish of ice cream, an apple tart, and 1/2 of a large chocolate cake. The footman said,
I'm afraid the Burgundy hasn't had time to breathe, my lord. Shall I decant it?
Yes, please. The footman fussed with a small table and a place setting. Walden was hungry, but he felt too tense to eat. I don't suppose I shall be able to sleep either, he thought. Alex helped himself to more brandy. He is drinking steadily, Walden realized. His movements were deliberate and machine-like, as if he had himself rigidly under control.
Where is Charlotte? Walden said suddenly.
Alex answered, She went to bed. She mustn't leave the house while all this is going on, Mrs. Braithwaite said.
Shall I tell her, my lord?
No, don't wake her. I'll see her at breakfast. Walden took a sip of wine, hoping it would relax him a little. We could move you again, Alex, if it would make you feel better. Alex gave a tight little smile.
I don't think there's much point, do you? Felix always manages to find me. The best plan is for me to hide in my room, sign the treaty as soon as possible, and then go home.
Walden nodded. The servants went out. Sir Arthur said,
There is something else, Stephen. He seemed embarrassed. I mean the question of just what made Felix suddenly catch a train to Walden Hall halt.
In all the panic, Walden had not even considered that.
Yes. How in heaven's name did he find out? As I understand it, only 2 groups of people knew where Prince Orloff had gone. One is the embassy staff, who of course have been passing telegrams and so on to and fro. The other group is your people here.
A traitor among my servants, Walden said. The thought was chilling.
Yes, said Sir Arthur hesitantly. Or, of course, among the family.
Lydia's dinner party was a disaster. With Stephen away, his brother George had to sit in as host, which made the numbers uneven. More seriously, Lydia was so distracted that her conversation was barely polite, let alone sparkling. All but the most kind-hearted guests asked after Charlotte, knowing full well that she was in disgrace. Lydia just said that she had gone to the country for a few days' rest. She spoke mechanically, hardly knowing what she was saying. Her mind was full of nightmares, Felix being arrested, Stephen being shot, Felix being beaten, Stephen bleeding, Felix running, Stephen dying. She longed to tell someone how she felt, but with her guests she could talk only of last night's ball, the prospects for the Cowes regatta, the Balkan situation, and Lloyd George's budget. Fortunately, they did not linger after dinner. They were all going to a ball or a crush or a concert. As soon as the last one had left, Lydia went into the hall and picked up the telephone. She could not speak to Stephen, for Walden Hall was not yet on the phone, so she called Winston Churchill's home in Eccleston Square. He was out. She tried the Admiralty No. 10 and the National Liberal Club without success. She had to know what had happened. Finally, she thought of Basil Thompson, and she telephoned Scotland Yard. Thompson was still at his desk, working late. "Lady Walden, how are you?" he said. Lydia thought, "People will be polite," she said. "What is the news?" "Bad, I'm afraid. Our friend Felix has slipped through our fingers again." Relief washed over Lydia in a tidal wave. Thank you," she said. "I don't think you need to worry too much," Thompson went on. "Prince Olaf is well guarded now." Lydia blushed with shame. She had been so pleased that Felix was all right that she had momentarily forgotten to worry about Alex and Stephen. "I'll try not to worry," she said. "Good night." "Good night, Lady Walden." She put down the phone. She went upstairs and rang for her maid to come and unlace her. She felt distraught. Nothing was resolved. Everyone she loved was still in danger. How long could it go on? Felix would not give up, she was sure, unless he got caught. The maid came and unbuttoned her gown and unlaced her corset. Some ladies confided in their maids, Lydia knew. She did not. She had once in St. Petersburg. She decided to write to her sister, for it was too early to go to bed. She told the maid to bring writing paper from the morning room. She put on a wrap and sat by the open window, staring into the darkness of the park. The evening was close. It had not rained for 3 months, but during the last few days the weather had become thundery, and soon there would surely be storms. The maid brought paper, pens, ink, and envelopes. Lydia took a sheet of paper and wrote, "Dear Tatiana." She did not know where to begin. "How can I explain about Charlotte," she thought, "when I don't understand her myself? And I daren't say anything about Felix, for Tatiana might tell the Tsar, and if the Tsar knew how close Alex had come to being killed. Felix is so clever. How on earth did he find out where Alex is hiding? We wouldn't even tell Charlotte." Charlotte. Lydia went cold. "Charlotte?" She stood upright and cried, "Oh, no!" He was about 40 and wearing a tweed cap. A sense of inevitable horror possessed her. It was like one of those crucifying dreams in which you think of the worst thing that could possibly happen, and that thing immediately begins to happen. The ladder falls, the child is run over, the loved one dies. She buried her face in her hands. She felt dizzy. "I must think. I must try to think. Please, God, help me think." Charlotte met a man in the National Gallery. That evening she asked me where Alex was. I didn't tell her. Perhaps she asked Stephen, too. He wouldn't have told her. Then she was sent home to Walden Hall, and of course she discovered that Alex was there. 2 days later, Felix went to Walden Hall Holt. "Make this be a dream," she prayed. "Make me wake up now, please, and find myself in my own bed. Make it be morning." It was not a dream. Felix was the man in the tweed cap. Charlotte had met her father. They had been holding hands. It was horrible, horrible. Had Felix told Charlotte the truth? Had he said, "I am your real father"? Had he revealed the secret of 19 years? Did he even know? Surely he must have. Why else would she be collaborating with him? My daughter conspiring with an anarchist to commit murder. She must be helping him still. What can I do? I must warn Stephen. But how can I do that without telling him he's not Charlotte's father? I wish I could think. She rang for her maid again. I must find a way to put an end to this, she thought. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I must do something. When the maid came, she said, Start packing. I shall leave first thing in the morning. I have to go to Walden Hall. After dark, Felix headed across the fields. It was a warm, humid night, and very dark. Heavy cloud hid the stars and the moon. He had to walk slowly, for he was almost blind. He found his way to the railway line and turned north. Walking along the tracks, he could go a little faster, for there was a faint shine on the steel lines, and he knew there would be no obstacles. He passed through dark stations, creeping along the deserted platforms. He heard rats in the empty waiting rooms. He had no fear of rats. Once upon a time he had killed them with his hands and eaten them. The names of the stations were stamped on sheet metal signs, and he could read them by touch. When he reached Walden Hall Holt, he recalled Charlotte's directions. The house is 3 miles out of the village on the north road. The railway line was running roughly north-northeast. He followed it another mile or so, measuring the distance by counting his paces. He had reached 1,600 when he bumped into someone. The man gave a shout of surprise, and then Felix had him by the throat. An overpowering smell of beer came from the man. Felix realized he was just a drunk going home, and relaxed his grip.
"Don't be frightened," the man said in a slurred voice.
"All right," Felix said. He let go.
"It's the only way I can get home, see, without getting lost."
"On your way, then." The man moved on. A moment later, he said,
"Don't go to sleep on the line. The milk train comes at 4 o'clock.
Felix made no reply, and the drunk shuffled off. Felix shook his head, disgusted with himself for being so jumpy. He might have killed the man. He was weak with relief. This would not do. He decided to find the road. He moved off the railway line, stumbled across a short stretch of rough ground, then came up against a flimsy three-wire fence. He waited for a moment. What was in front of him? A field? Someone's back garden? The village green? There was no darkness like a dark night in the country with the nearest street light 100 miles away. He heard a sudden movement close to him, and out of the corner of his eye he saw something white. He bent down and fumbled on the ground until he found a small stone, then threw it in the direction of the white thing. There was a whinny, and a horse cantered away. Felix listened. If there were dogs nearby, the whinny ought to make them bark. He heard nothing. He stooped and clambered through the fence. He walked slowly across the paddock. Once he stumbled into a bush. He heard another horse, but did not see it. He came up against another wire fence, climbed through it, and bumped into a wooden building. Immediately there was a tremendous noise of chickens clucking. A dog started to bark. A light came on in the window of a house. Felix threw himself flat and lay still. The light showed him that he was in a small farmyard. He had bumped into the henhouse. Beyond the farmhouse he could see the road he was looking for. The chickens quieted. The dog gave a last disappointed howl, and the light went out. Felix walked to the road. It was a dirt road bordered by a dry ditch. Beyond the ditch there seemed to be woodland. Felix remembered, "On the left-hand side of the road you will see a wood." He was almost there. He walked north along the uneven road, his hearing strained for the sound of someone approaching. After more than a mile he sensed that there was a wall on his left. A little farther on the wall was broken by a gate, and he saw a light. He leaned on the iron bars of the gate and peered through. There seemed to be a long drive. At its far end he could see, dimly illuminated by a pair of flickering lamps, the pillared portico of a vast house. As he watched, a tall figure walked across the front of the house. A sentry. In that house, he thought, is Prince Orlov. I wonder which is his bedroom window. Suddenly he heard the sound of a car approaching very fast. He ran back 10 paces and threw himself into the ditch. A moment later the car's headlights swept along the wall, and it pulled up in front of the gate. Someone got out. Felix heard knocking. There must be a gatehouse, he realized. He had not seen it in the darkness. A window was opened, and a voice shouted, "Who's there?" Another voice replied, "Police, from the special branch of Scotland Yard." "Just a minute." Felix lay perfectly still. He heard footsteps as the man who had got out of the car moved around restlessly. A door was opened. A dog barked, and a voice said, "Quiet, Rex." Felix stopped breathing. Was the dog on a lead? Would it smell Felix? Would it come snuffling along the ditch and find him and start to bark? The iron gates creaked open. The dog barked again. The voice said, "Shut up, Rex." A car door slammed, and the car moved off up the drive. The ditch was dark again. Now, Felix thought, if the dog finds me, I can kill it and the gatekeeper and run away. He tensed, ready to jump up as soon as he heard a snuffling sound near to his ear. The gates creaked shut. A moment later, the gatehouse door slammed. Felix breathed again. Chapter 14. Charlotte woke at 6 o'clock. She had drawn back the curtains of her bedroom windows so that the first rays of the sun would shine on her face and rouse her from sleep. It was a trick she had used years ago when Belinda was staying over, and the two of them had liked to roam around the house while the grown-ups were still in bed, and there was no one to tell them to behave like little ladies. Her first thought was for Felix. They had failed to catch him. He was so clever. Today he would surely be waiting for her in the wood. She jumped out of bed and looked outside. The weather had not yet broken. He would have been dry in the night anyway. She washed in cold water and dressed quickly in a long skirt, riding boots, and a jacket. She never wore a hat for these morning rides. She went downstairs. She saw nobody. There would be a maid or two in the kitchen, lighting fires and heating water, but otherwise the servants were still in bed. She went out of the south front door and almost bumped into a large uniformed policeman. "Heavens!" she exclaimed. "Who are you?"
"Constable Stevenson, miss."
He called her miss because he did not know who she was.
"I'm Charlotte Walden," she said.
"Pardon me, m'lady."
"That's all right. What are you doing here?"
"Guarding the house, m'lady."
"Oh, I see. Guarding the prince, you mean.
How reassuring.
How many of you are there?"
"Two outside and four inside.
The inside men are armed, but there'll be a lot more later."
"How so?"
"Big search party, m'lady. I hear there'll be 150 men here by 9. We'll get this anarchist chappy, never you fear."
"How splendid."
"Was you thinking of going riding, m'lady? I shouldn't if I was you, not today."
"No, I shan't," Charlotte lied. She walked away around the east wing of the house to the back. The stables were deserted. She went inside and found her mare, Spats, so called because of the white patches on her forelegs. She talked to her for a minute, stroking her nose, and gave her an apple. Then she saddled her, led her out of the stable, and mounted her. She rode away from the back of the house and around the park in a wide circle, staying out of sight and out of earshot of the policeman. She galloped across the west paddock and jumped the low fence into the wood. She walked Spats through the trees until she came to the bridle path, then let her trot. It was cool in the wood. The oak and beech trees were heavy with leaf shading the path. In the patches where the sun came through, dew rose from the ground like wisps of steam. Charlotte felt the heat of those stray sunbeams as she rode through them. The birds were very loud. She thought, what can he do against 150 men? His plan was impossible now. Alex was too well guarded, and the hunt for Felix was too well organized. At least Charlotte could warn him off. She reached the far end of the wood without seeing him. She was disappointed. She had been sure he would be here today. She began to worry, for if she did not see him, she could not warn him, and then he would surely be caught. But it was not yet 7 o'clock. Perhaps he had not begun to watch out for her. She dismounted and walked back, leading Spats. Perhaps Felix had seen her and was waiting to check whether she had been followed. She stopped in a glade to watch a squirrel. They did not mind people, although they would run away from dogs. Suddenly she felt she was being watched. She turned around, and there he was, looking at her with a peculiarly sad expression. He said, "Hello, Charlotte." She went to him and held both his hands. His beard was quite full now. His clothes were covered with bits of greenery. "You look dreadfully tired," she said in Russian. "I'm hungry. Did you bring food?"
"Oh, dear, no."
She had brought an apple for her horse and nothing for Felix.
"I didn't think of it."
"Never mind. I've been hungrier."
"Listen," she said, "you must go away immediately. If you leave now, you can escape."
"Why should I escape? I want to kidnap Orlov."
She shook her head. "It's impossible now. He has armed bodyguards. The house is patrolled by policemen, and by 9 o'clock there will be 150 men searching for you."
He smiled. "And if I escape, what will I do with the rest of my life?"
"But I won't help you commit suicide."
"Let's sit on the grass," he said. "I have something to explain to you." She sat with her back against a broad oak tree. Felix sat in front of her and crossed his legs like a Cossack. Dappled sunlight played across his weary face. He spoke rather formally, in complete sentences which sounded as if they might have been rehearsed. "I told you I was in love once with a woman called Lydia, and you said, 'That's my mother's name.' Do you remember?"
"I remember everything you ever said to me."
She wondered what this was all about.
"It was your mother."
She stared at him.
"You were in love with Mama?"
"More than that, we were lovers. She used to come to my apartment alone."
Do you understand what I mean?" Charlotte blushed with confusion and embarrassment. "Yes, I do." "Her father, your grandfather, found out. The old count had me arrested. Then he forced your mother to marry Walden."
"Oh, how terrible," Charlotte said softly. For some reason she was frightened of what he might say next.
"You were born 7 months after the wedding." He seemed to think that was very significant. Charlotte frowned. Felix said, "Do you know how long it takes for a baby to grow and be born?"
"No."
"It takes 9 months, normally, although it can take less." Charlotte